Welcome to the Baird Group Corporate Restructuring Review for March 2011, brought to you by the editors from the Troubled Company Reporter and Troubled Company Prospector. In this month's Corporate Restructuring Review, we will discuss five topics. First, last month's largest Chapter 11 filings. Second, large Chapter 11 filings TCR editors anticipate in the near term. Third, a quick review of major pending disputes in Chapter 11 cases that we monitor day by day. Fourth, reminders about debtors whose emergence from Chapter 11 has been delayed. And fifth, information you're unlikely to find elsewhere about new publicly traded securities being issued by Chapter 11 debtors. Now, let's review the largest March 2011 Chapter 11 filings. Danilo Muñoz reports a total of six companies with assets of at least $100 million filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in March 2011. There were also six such cases in February of 2011 and five in January 2011. This translates into an average of about six mega cases per month during the first quarter of 2011. In contrast, there were 12 mega cases in March 2010, seven in February 2010, and 15 in January 2010. The average number of mega cases in the first quarter of 2010 was about 11 per month. Mega case filings declined about 50% for the first quarter of 2011 from the same period 2010. Chapter 11 bankruptcies involving more than $1 billion in assets remain scant. There was no such filing in January and March of this year, and there were two in February. Meanwhile, during the first quarter of 2010, there was no Chapter 11 filings with assets in excess of $1 billion. A total of 12 companies with assets of more than $100 million filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy on March 2010, compared to 7 in February and 15 in January of last year. There were a total of 105 mega cases in 2010, or an average of about 9 filings per month. The largest Chapter 11 case for March 2011 was filed by Barnes Bay Development Limited, which listed $531 million in assets and $462 million in debt as of the bankruptcy petition date. Barnes Bay Development filed for Chapter 11 protection with the bankruptcy court for the District of Delaware on March 17th. Beverly Hills, California-based Barnes Bay Development owns Viceroy Anguilla Resort and Residences on British West Indies Island of Anguilla. The beach resort has 166 luxury residences consisting of suites, penthouses, townhouses, and villas. Barnes Bay Development filed on April 1st a Chapter 11 plan to liquidate to facilitate the sale of the resort. The Delaware Bankruptcy Court will convene a hearing on May 3rd to consider the adequacy of the disclosure statement explaining Barnes Bay Development proposed liquidation. Another mega case in March 2011 was filed by Newstream Secure Capital Incorporated with estimated assets and debts of $500 million to $1 billion each as of the petition date. Newstream Secured Capital is an interrelated group of companies that collectively comprise an investment fund headquartered in Richfield, Connecticut. Founded in 2002, Newstream focuses on providing non-traded private debt to the insurance, real estate, and commercial finance sectors. Newstream Secured Capital and three affiliates filed Chapter 11 petitions with the bankruptcy court for the District of Delaware on March 13th. A prepackaged Chapter 11 plan was filed together with the petitions. Before seeking bankruptcy petition, Newstream negotiated a plan for reorganization, which was overwhelmingly approved by investors. The debtors had proposed that the court hold a combined hearing to consider the adequacy of disclosure statement and petition solicitation procedures and to confirm the prepackaged plan. The debtors proposed that the combined hearing be set as soon as practicable between the dates of April 21st and May 3rd. Another large Chapter 11 filing was by Harry and David Holdings Incorporated and its units, which was also filed in Delaware Bankruptcy Court on March 28th. The latest financial statements filed with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission show Harry and David has $304.3 million in total assets and $360.8 million in total liabilities. Medford, Oregon-based Harry and David is a multi-channel specialty retailer and producer of branded premium gift quality fruit, gourmet products and gift marketed under the Harry and David Wolfman's and Cushman's brands. It has 70 stores across the country. Harry and David has reached an agreement with holders of approximately 81% of the senior notes on the term of a reorganization that will eliminate the substantial debt and provide equity financing to restore the company's balance sheet. PJ Finance Company, LLC, along with six affiliates, filed Chapter 11 petitions with the Delaware Bankruptcy Court on March 7th. PJ Finance disclosed total assets of at least $275 million and a total debt of at least $479 million. PJ Finance owns or holds ownership interest in 32 apartment communities that collectively have more than 9,500 rentable units. The company has 20 apartment locations in Texas and the remaining 12 in Arizona, Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee. Other large Chapter 11 bankruptcy filings from March 2011 were by Miramar Real Estate Management Incorporated, a micro-built corporation and affiliate CL Verify LLC. San Juan, Puerto Rico-based Miramar Real Estate Management filed for bankruptcy protection on March 2nd with the Bankruptcy Court for the District of Puerto Rico. Miramar estimated its assets and debts at $100 million to $500 million. Microbuilt and CL Verified filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection on March 23rd with the Bankruptcy Court for the District of New Jersey, estimating $100 million to $500 million in assets, but under $1 million in liabilities. CL Verify, in Tampa, Florida, offers small business owner solutions for fraud prevention, consumer financing, debt collection, skip tracing, background screening. Microbuilt provides access to over 3 billion debt account records, nearly 30 billion pieces of demographic and public record data, and over 100 million unique consumer records to prevent identity fraud, elevate credit risk, and retain customer relationships. Of the March mega cases, four went to Delaware Bankruptcy Court, one went to New Jersey, another to Puerto Rico. In February, three cases went to the Southern District of New York Bankruptcy Court in Manhattan, one went to Delaware, one went to Southern District of Texas, and one to the Middle District of Georgia. Of the January mega cases, four went to Delaware, and the remaining mega cases went to the Northern District of Texas Bankruptcy Court. Lehman Brothers Holding Corp. remains the biggest corporate bust in history. Lehman, which filed in 2008, had $639 billion in total assets and $613 billion in total debts at the time of its filing. For the first 3 months of 2011, the largest Chapter 11 filing was by MSR Resort Golf Course LLC, which has $2.2 billion in assets, $1.9 billion in debt as of November 30, 2010. MSR Resort Golf Course and its affiliates own and operate five iconic luxury resort properties with related real estate properties and amenities. The resorts subject to the filings of the Grand Wailea Resort and Spa, Arizona Baltimore Resort and Spa, and La Quinta Resort and Club, and PGA West, Doyle Golf Resort and Spa, and Claremont Resort and Spa. MSR Resort and its affiliates filed for Chapter 11 protection in Manhattan on February 1st. As indicated in two of the mega cases in March, Newstream and Harry and David were prepackaged or pre-negotiated. This risked the total of the prepack and the pre-negotiated cases this year to 5. The other three pre-pack and pre-negotiated cases were commenced in January. For 2010, a total of 35 pre-pack and pre-negotiated cases were filed, about one in every three filings. In addition to the Chapter 11 debtors mentioned in Mr. Munoz's report, the Troubled Company Reporter provides detailed reporting about every Chapter 11 filing nationwide. Stay tuned to learn more about obtaining a trial subscription to the TCR at no cost or obligation. Now, let's return to the topic of large Chapter 11 filings troubled company report editors anticipate in the near term. Carlos Fernandez has compiled a list of six companies he's convinced are nearing Chapter 11 bankruptcy: Horizon Lines, Nebraska Book, Municipal Mortgage and Equity, American Apparel, Perkins & Marie, and Trico Shipping. And we'll discuss each of these six troubled situations. Standard & Poor Ratings Service lowered its long-term corporate credit rating on Horizon Lines Incorporated to CCC from B. The downgrade reflects S&P's expectation that company will breach its financial covenants and under the senior unsecured notes and the senior secured credit facility later this year, said Standard & Poor's credit analyst Funmi Afanja. It's also reflects refinancing risk, and substantially all of the company's debt matured in 2012. Horizon Lines, which has 15 Jones Act qualified U.S. flag container ships and 5 U.S. flag container ships, may file for bankruptcy as soon as April, Jonathan Keener and Shannon D. Harrington of Bloomberg News have reported, citing three people familiar with the matter. Sources have told Bloomberg that the company may seek to swap its debt for equity to avoid bankruptcy. Horizon Lines reported a net loss of $57.9 billion on $1.16 billion of operating revenue for the fiscal year ending December 26, 2010, compared to a net loss of $31.3 million on $1.2 billion of operating revenue for the fiscal year ending December 20th, 2009. The company's balance sheet at December 26, 2010 showed $786 million in total assets, $646 million in total liability, and $40 million in total stockholder equity. Nebraska Book Company and parent NBC Acquisition Corp., operators of 280 college bookstores, have hired legal and financial advisors to help in restructuring the company's debt and preparing for a Chapter 11 filing if necessary, according to Bloomberg News. If there is a distressed exchange or a Chapter 11 filing, Goldman Sachs Group and Cerberus Capital Management should end up in the control of the Lincoln, Nebraska-based company after purchasing debt at discount, people familiar with the talks have said. The company reported a net loss of $12.5 million on $414 million of revenue for the 9 months ending December 31st, 2010, compared to a net loss of $6.77 million on $412 million of revenue for the same period during the period year. The company's balance sheet at December 31, 2010 showed $657 million in total assets, $624.51 million in total liabilities, and stockholders' equity at $33.28 million. Moody's has said it expects Nebraska Book will not be able to make sufficient dividend payments to NBC Acquisition that will be needed by the parent company to meet scheduled interest payment due in September 2011 on its $77 million senior debentures date 2013. Dividends payments from Nebraska Book are the only source of debt repayment for the senior debentures. S&P, which has lowered Nebraska Book corporate credit rating from CCC to B-, said the company's ratings reflect weak liquidity. According to S&P, the company needs to refinance its debt or restructure because of near-term maturities, but expects this undertaking to be somewhat difficult, given that the company's results are highly seasonal and operating results have been weak over the past several quarters. Municipal Mortgage and Equity, LLC, in its annual report on Form 10-K for the year ending December 31, 2010, warned that it might have to pursue a Chapter 11 filing. The company reported a net loss of $72.5 million on $107.7 million of total revenue for 2010, compared to the net loss of $380.1 million on $134.8 million of total revenue for 2010. 2009. KPMG LLP in Baltimore, Maryland expressed substantial doubt about municipal mortgage and equity ability to continue as a going concern. KPMG said the company had been negatively impacted by the deterioration of the capital markets and has liquidity issues, which have resulted in the company having to sell assets, liquidate collateral positions, post additional collateral, sell or close different business segments, and work with its creditors to restructure or extend its debts arrangements. According to the regulatory filing, although the company has been able to extend restructuring and obtain forbearance agreements on various debts and interest rate swap agreements, such that none of our debt has been accelerated at present, most of these extensions, restructurings, and forbearance agreements are short-term in nature and do not provide a viable long-term solution to the company's liquidity issues, the company said in the filing. If the company is not able to negotiate other arrangements, the company will not be able to pay the interest on its non-bond debt, and possibly sooner. If these subordinate debentures were accelerated, the company would not be able to pay the debt. In the event the management is not successful in restructuring or settling its remaining non-bond related debt, or in generating sufficient liquidity from the sale of non-bond related assets, or if the bond portfolio net interest income is substantially reduced, the company may have to consider seeking relief through a bankruptcy filing. At December 31, 2010, the company's balance sheet showed $2.06 billion in total assets, $1.4 billion in total liabilities, and stockholders' equity of $700 million. Baltimore, Maryland-based Municipal Mortgage and Equity, which has been contracting its business starting 2008, has a majority position in the International Housing Solutions, SARL, a partnership that was formed to promote and invest in affordable housing in overseas markets. The company has also an unfunded equity commitment of $5.1 million, or 2.67% of the total committed capital, with respect to its role as the general partner to the South African Workforce Housing Fund, SA. American Peril Incorporated, is in its annual report on Form 10-K, filed with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, disclosed that it is unable to improve its operating performance and financial position, obtain alternative sources of capital, or otherwise meets its liquidity needs, it may need to voluntarily seek protection under Chapter 11 of the Bankruptcy Code. American Apparel reported a net loss of $86.3 million on $533 million of net sales for the year ending December 31, 2010, compared to its net income of $1.11 million on $559 million of net sales during the prior year. The company's balance sheet at a year-end showed $328 billion in total assets, $253 million in total liabilities, and $75 million in total stockholders' equity. In its regulatory filing, the company said, "We are currently experiencing significant liquidity constraints. If we are not able to generate sufficient cash flow from operations or obtain external sources of financing sufficient to fund our debt service requirements and operational needs in the near future, or we are not able to successfully or efficiently implement the strategies that we are pushing to improve our operating performance and financial position, and may determine that it is in the American Apparel's best interest to voluntarily seek relief through a prepackaged, prearranged, or other type of filing under Chapter 11 of the U.S. Bankruptcy Code, including prior to the time we would otherwise be required to do so in an acceleration event. Seeking relief under the U.S. Bankruptcy Code, if such relief does not lead to a quick emergence from Chapter 11, could materially adversely affect the relationships between us and our existing potential customers, employees, suppliers, partners, and others. further if we were unable to implement a plan of reorganization, or if sufficient debtor in possession financing were not available, we could be forced to liquidate under Chapter 7 of the U.S. Bankruptcy Code. New York-based Marcum LLP, in its audit report on American Apparel's year-end financial statements, expressed substantial doubt about the company's ability to continue as a growing concern. As a result of the noncompliance with certain loan covenants, Marcum said the company's debt, with carrying value of roughly $138 million at December 31, 2010, could be declared immediately due and payable. Los Angeles, California-based American Apparel is a manufacturer, distributor, and retailer of branded fashion basic apparel. As of September 30, 2010, American Apparel employed over 10,000 people and operated 278 retail stores in 20 different countries. Standard & Poor's Rating Services said Perkins and Marie Callender's Incorporated could seek bankruptcy protection under Chapter 11 of the U.S. Bankruptcy Code. S&P, early April, lowered its corporate rating on Memphis, Tennessee-based Perkins to D for default from CC. The downgrade follows Perkins missing a $9.5 million interest payment due April 1st on $190 million senior unsecured notes. Although the company has 30-day grace period to make the payments, we believe this is a highly unlikely given our assessment of the limited liquidity sources. In addition, the company has another interest payment due on its senior secured notes on May 31st. S&P does not expect the company to make the payments on time. Perkins has hired Whitby Santarsi and Company as its financial advisor to explore financial alternatives. The company is seeking to restructure its balance sheet, and S&P says the company could file for bankruptcy protection under Chapter 11. Perkins had $290 million in total assets and $506 million in total liabilities as of October 3, 2010. Trico Marine Services Incorporated provides subsea services, subsea trenching and protection services, and towing and supply vessels, sought bankruptcy protection on August 25, 2010. Trico Shipping AS, a non-bankrupt subsidiary of Trico Marine Services Incorporated, set an April 11th deadline for an out-of-court exchange offer to holders of its 11.78% senior secured notes due 2014. In case the out-of-court exchange fails to gain the requisite votes, Trico Shipping is soliciting votes from note holders for a prepackaged plan of reorganization. The deadline for votes on the prepack plan is April 18th. At 5 p.m. Eastern Time on April 7th, $396 million principal amount of the note, representing roughly 99.11% of the outstanding principal of the notes, had been validly tendered and not withdrawn in the exchange offer. In addition to the challenged companies mentioned in Mr. Fernandez's report, the troubled company reporter provides ongoing reporting about more than 3,000 companies experiencing financial distress or restructuring their balance sheet in a judicial proceeding. Stay tuned to learn more about obtaining a trial subscription to the TCR at no cost or obligation. Next, we'll quickly review major pending disputes in three large Chapter 11 cases that troubled company reported editors monitor day by day. Ivy Magdadero identified two major disputes in the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy. The disputes involve litigation commenced by the trustee for the Lehman Brothers brokerage unit against Citibank and the company's own suit against J.P. Morgan Chase in an effort to recover billions of dollars for Lehman creditors. The trustee of Lehman Brothers brokerage unit commenced yet another lawsuit in mid-March to recover billions of dollars for the company's creditors, this time against Citibank. In in the complaint filed March 18th with the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the Southern District of New York for the benefit of layman creditors, James Giddens sought to recover more than $1.3 billion from Citibank North America, Citigroup Incorporated, and their affiliates. Mr. Giddens is a trustee for the liquidation, of the liquidation proceedings of Lehman Brothers Incorporated under the U.S. Securities Investor Protection Act of 1970. The SIPI trustee alleged that after Lehman filed for bankruptcy in September 2008, Citibank conditioned continuance of certain foreign exchange settlement services to Lehman's broker unit in the units depositing $1 billion into its account at Citibank. The SIP trustee added that during the week of September 15th, Citibank obtained a $700 million pledge from Barclays Bank PLC as a security for carrying on the same foreign exchange settlement services. The trustee noted that on September 19th, after Lehman Brothers Incorporated filed for SIPI proceedings, and after LBI requested the return of the $1 billion deposit, Citibank advised LBI that it had set the deposit off against obligations owed to Citibank. According to the complaint, LBI owed Citibank more than $15 billion, which was accumulated from September 15th to the 19th of 2008. The SIP trustee also noted that Citibank had its affiliates around the world froze more than $300 million in additional LBI deposits. The trustee is asking the bankruptcy court to rule that the Citibank willfully violated the automatic stay provision of the bankruptcy code when it seized a $1 billion deposit on September 19, 2008. LBI, at the time of the increasing financial distress, found itself in the coerced position of facing a demand for funds that it could not refuse, the complaint said. Citibank representatives who allegedly knew LBI would not be able to remain a viable business without access to foreign exchange settlement services reportedly attended meetings held in September 2008 at the Federal Reserve Bank in New York and at Lehman's. In reaction to the lawsuit, Citibank has said it will vigorously defend its right to recover its losses, which amounted to more than $1 billion for helping settle Lehman's trades. Citibank maintained that the extension of credit it extended benefited Lehman amid the panic invoked by the company's bankruptcy filing. A Citibank spokesperson called the trustees' claims as unjustified and without merit. As noted earlier, Lehman filed the biggest corporate bankruptcy file so far in U.S. history. Ms. Magdalero reports that no major court decisions are expected anytime soon in the Lehman Brothers $8.6 billion lawsuit against J.P. Morgan Chase. J.P. Morgan was Lehman's banker when the company filed for bankruptcy and sold its brokerage unit to Barclays. Lehman's suit alleged that J.P. Morgan extracted collateral from it using insider information a few days before the company filed bankruptcy. J.P. Morgan filed a revised countersuit in mid-February, alleging that Lehman left it with $25 billion in unpaid loans secured by undesirable assets. In recent development, Lehman filed a motion to dismiss J.P. Morgan countersuit in early 2011. Lehman said J.P. Morgan did not state any claim in its revised countersuit entitling the bank to damages. J.P. Morgan is scheduled to file an answer to the motion to dismiss in early June. Lehman may file reply papers in late July. No date has been set for the hearing on Lehman's motion to dismiss. Trial on the case has been set to begin April 2012. According to Ms. Magdadaro, the resolution of the disputed $13 billion leverage buyout of Tribune Company remains in limbo as of press time, as Judge Carey of the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the District of Delaware refused to choose which of the two rival plans is best for Tribune's reorganization after conducting a two-week hearing in March. The 2007 buyout has been cited as one of the major reasons that contributed to Tribune's insolvency problems. Lawsuits were filed formally by Tribune creditors in the bankruptcy court in November 2010 against parties involved in the 2007 buyout, which include lenders J.P. Morgan Chase, Merrill Lynch Capital Corporation, Tribune executive Sam Zell, and other directors and officers of the company. On March 22, 2011, Judge Carey extended an order allowing creditors to file a second round of lawsuits related to the buyout in the state courts, even if those creditors have already filed similar claims in federal court. Creditors have until June 4th to file those claims in state court. Judge Carey, however, warned that suits filed in the state court may see little progress as Tribune is still faced with the challenges of how to emerge from bankruptcy. The two competing bankruptcy plans for Tribune were presented to Judge Carey in March, one of which calls for a lawsuit releases against the lenders in the relation to the buyout. That restructuring plan is backed by Tribune Company and sponsored by J.P. Morgan and other LBO lenders. The rival restructuring plan is backed by Aurelius Capital Management. It calls for the prosecution of involved parties in the 2007 LBO. During the hearing in March, Judge Carey listened to arguments from the plan's proponents, but said both did not satisfy him. The judge instead urged parties to engage in more negotiation talks and even brought up the idea of mediator. Judge Carey has nevertheless said he sees merit in a plan based on a settlement that resolves a maximum number of buyout-related claims, but only if the settlement is properly priced. The LBO lenders have previously offered about $400 million to $500 million in contribution in exchange for the lawsuit releases. The Aurelius Group filed an amended plan on March 28th, which assumes that $8 billion total distributable value between 73.9% and 81.12% of the equity value of reorganization Tribune will be distributed to creditors. Tribune maintains that its enterprise value is $6.75 billion. Tribune also modified its bankruptcy plan on April 5th in an effort to satisfy major objections raised by Aurelius and other bondholders. Judge Carey set another plan confirmation hearing in Tribune for April 12th to give parties more time to mediate and work out a settlement. Tribune is the second largest newspaper publisher in the United States, and it filed for bankruptcy in December 2008. Moving on, Washington Mutual Incorporated is moving closer to a resolution of dispute with J.P. Morgan after Judge Mary Walmath of the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the District of Delaware approved on March 30th the disclosure statement explaining WaMu's amended Chapter 11 plan, allowing the former bank holding company to solicit creditor votes on its plan. Not all of the creditors who originally voted will be eligible to vote at this time, though Judge Walworth had said. The amended plan is premised on a global settlement of a lawsuit involving WaMu, J.P. Morgan, and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation involving, among others, $4 billion in disputed funds on dispute with J.P. Morgan. The global settlement calls for the allocation plan of billions of dollars in tax refunds and cash among WaMu's biggest creditors, FDIC, and J.P. Morgan. Judge Walrath ruled that the plan's so-called disclosure statement, as amended, contains enough information to allow the vote. The judge previously ordered WaMu to add more details to the disclosure statement after heeding the request of WaMu creditors and shareholders on the issue of broad and inappropriate lawsuit releases. The judge is set to convene a plan confirmation hearing on May 2nd. The hearing in May will involve groups of creditors and shareholders who have long opposed the plan. They have filed objections to the revised plan, concerned that they will be paid nothing under the plan. Judge Walrath has not ruled on some of the issues and objecting creditors and shareholders have raised. Note holders are also questioning how much interest WaMu senior creditors will receive. The argument on the interest and the securities could be worth more than $1 billion, according to Seth Ard, Esquire, an attorney representing WaMu shareholders. WaMu is also directed to begin mediation with a group of creditors who hold litigation tracking warrants related to a lawsuit. J.P. Morgan bought WaMu's bankruptcy operations in September of 2008 for a $1.9 billion payment to the FDIC. In an early April statement to investors, J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon said J.P. Morgan's acquisition of WaMu Bank turned out to be a bit worse than expected, but clearly still worth it. Mr. Dimon said WaMu's mortgage origination and servicing business performed better than expected, while its other retail banking operations, such as checking accounts and credit cards, did significantly worse. The troubled company reporter provides detailed reporting about every Chapter 11 filing nationwide. Stay tuned to learn more about obtaining a trial subscription to the TCR at no cost or obligation. Julianne Lopez reports about five Chapter 11 debtors whose emergence from Chapter 11 has been delayed. Tribune Company, W.R. Grace & Company, Lehman Brothers, Washington Mutual, and Pfizer Quigley Unit. According to Ms. Lopez, Judge Kevin Carey has pushed back a hearing to consider confirmation of the competing Chapter 11 plans in Tribune's case from April 11th to April 12th to give parties more time to mediate and work out a settlement. At a telephonic hearing held April 5th, Judge Carey said the delay of the confirmation hearing was requested by Judge Kevin Gross, who is overseeing the mediation between warring parties composed of Debtors, Creditors Committee, Oak Tree Capital, Angelo Gordon, and J.P. Morgan on one side, and Aurelius Capital, Deutsche Bank, Law Debenture Trust, and Wilmington Trust on the other side. Judge Carey had previously told lawyers that should neither plan proposal satisfy him, he will consider appointing a Chapter 11 trustee to oversee the company, which would further delay the debtors' emergence from bankruptcy. The debtors filed a modified Second Amendment joint plan of reorganization on April 5th, maintaining a $6.75 billion total distribution enterprise value of the debtors. The noteholders' Second Amended joint plan of reorganization dated March 28th assumes that $8 billion total distributive value between 73.9 and 81.12 of equity value of reorganized debtors will be distributed to creditors. Tribune's April 5th changes to the reorganization proposal prompted 20 classes of general unsecured creditors to change their votes from opposition to support. The April 5th plan contained a provision capping claims of unsecured creditors of the operating companies at $150 million. The Tribune removed the cap. Four claim holders decided to change their votes from no to yes. By removing the cap, Tribune said that creditors of operating subsidiaries will now be assured of receiving 100%. The changed votes came from Long Acre Opportunity Fund, LP, Liquidity Solution Incorporated, Fair Harbor Capital LLC, and Debt Acquisition Company of America. Judge Carey heard 2 weeks of testimony in March. He was set to hear closing arguments from the lawyers on April 13th and 14th. W.R. Grace marked its 10th year in bankruptcy on April 2nd. Several parties took an appeal from Judge Judith Fitzgerald. January 31st, order confirming the company's joint plan of reorganization. The party that filed the appeals included the Official Committee of Unsecured Creditors, a group of lenders under Grace's Petition Bank Credit Facilities, Garlock Sealing Technologies, the State of Montana, Her Majesty the Queen and Right of Canada, and BNSF Railway Company. Grace's joint plan is now before the United States District Court in Delaware for a final stamp of approval. This is a necessary step before Grace may exit Chapter 11. Oral arguments on the appeals are set to be heard by the District Court on July 12, 2011. Moving on, Judge James Peck of Manhattan is slated to consider approval of the disclosure statement explaining Lehman Brothers' bankruptcy plan, as well as a process for the solicitation of votes from creditors at a hearing on June 28th. Under Lehman's revised plan, filed in January, creditors that hold senior unsecured claims against the company would recover 21.4% of their claim, up from 17.4% in the initial plan. The company's general unsecured creditors would recover 19.8% of their claims, which is a 14.7% increase from what was previously proposed in the initial plan. Lehman's plan faces competition from creditor repayment plan proposed by an ad hoc group of Lehman creditors, which includes the pension fund, public employees retirement system, and hedge fund Paulson and Company. Under the rival plan, senior creditors with claims against Lehman Brothers Holdings would recover about 24.5%. The ad hoc group has asked the court to consider its disclosure statement at the June 28th hearing, along with Lehman's plan. Bank of America has also asked Judge Peck to consider any competing plan and disclosure statement simultaneously with Lehman's proposed plan. Other Lehman creditors, which include a group of companies led by Morgan Stanley Capital Service Incorporated, also filed papers calling for a rival plan to be considered along with the same timeline as Lehman plan. Meanwhile, Bloomberg News said a group of creditors is considering proposing a bankruptcy plan for Lehman Brothers that would compete against the two other proposals. The report did not specify which entities might propose a third plan. Washington Mutual won court approval in March to move to the next stage in its renewed attempt to exit bankruptcy, but was told to spell out what effect suspicions of insider trading could have on the $7 billion distribution plan. Judge Mary Walrath said the company can send out its revised plan to creditors for a vote after supplementing it with an analysis of what could happen if there is proof of insider trading. According to estimates, $700 million or more worth of value could swing to lower-ranking creditors if shareholders present enough evidence that big investors profited from inside knowledge gained at the Chapter 11 plan bargaining table. The suspicions are focused on four hedge funds that sat at the bargaining table when Washington Mutual hammered out its Chapter 11 distribution scheme: Appaloosa Management, LP, Aurelius Capital Management, LP, Centerbridge Partners, LP, and Owl Creek Asset Management, LP. The hedge funds deny breaching rules that ban trading based on confidential information and say the suspicions are unfounded. The official committee of the equity security holders is investigating allegations to see whether there is sufficient evidence to make a case at the confirmation hearings in May. WaMu agreed to add information about the financial effect of a potential finding that some or all of the hedge funds profited based on confidential Chapter 11 data to materials that creditors will review before deciding on how to vote on the plan. The company has set a May 2nd date to seek confirmation of its revamped plan. Judge Walrath has already approved the center feature of the bankruptcy plan, which is an agreement among WaMu's biggest creditors, banking regulators, and J.P. Morgan to split billions of dollars in tax refunds and cash. The hearing in May will involve groups of creditors and shareholders who have long opposed the plan. They have filed objections to the revised plan that are similar to the complaints they made in December. Judge Walrath did not rule on some of the issues that the creditors and shareholders had fought over. Note holders are battling each other over how much interest WaMu senior creditors will be paid in full will receive. The group of investors who own a specialized form of debt called trust preferred securities are in a dispute with senior creditors over whether the securities became worthless when WaMu filed bankruptcy. The court's recent ruling moves WaMu a step closer to ending its stay in bankruptcy, which began September 2008, when regulators seized its bank unit. In March, Pfizer reached a settlement with asbestos claimant that may bring an end to a 7-year-old bankruptcy case of its Quigley unit. Judge Stuart Bernstein refused to allow Quigley to exit Chapter 11 court protection in September last year, saying Pfizer's had manipulated the bankruptcy process to benefit itself. Pfizer and a committee of asbestos claimants entered into an agreement on March 20th that may resolve their dispute over claims, according to the court's papers filed in Manhattan. The accord resolves the legal and equitable issues that existed under the plan, including enhancing distributions for current claimants and future demand holders, improving reorganized Quigley's long-term feasibility, and rectifying concerns regarding good faith, lawyers for Quigley wrote. Asbestos claims against Quigley may total $4.45 billion during the next 42 years, according to testimony cited by Judge Bernstein in September. Under the deal, which requires court approval, asbestos claimants would vote for a favor of Quigley's bankruptcy plan and waive all rights to a jury trial. In exchange, Pfizer would contribute $264.9 million in cash and all of the stock in its reorganized Quigley, in a reorganized Quigley to a trust to pay asbestos claims. Pfizer also would forgive it its own claims against the non-operating unit, according to a draft of the plan. Pfizer spokesman Christopher Loder said once Quigley's reorganization plan is presented and confirmed by the U.S. Bankruptcy Court, asbestos-related liability arising from Quigley will be resolved through a fund established as part of the bankruptcy reorganization. PsycMerica and Constellation reports about nine companies who issued or will issue shares of new common stock upon reorganization they filed in their Chapter 11 cases. They are QSGI Incorporated, Bank United Financial, Harry & David, RHI Entertainment, Sbarro, PJ Finance Company, The Majestic Star Casino, Constar International, Wolverine Tube. Now, on March 24th, the bankruptcy court in West Palm Beach, Florida, confirmed QSGI Incorporated plan for reorganization. As part of the plan, QSGI will merge with information technology company Cruiscom in a stock-for-stock transaction. Under the plan, stockholders will retain their common shares. QSGI is a technology service provider. The company filed a voluntary petition for reorganization under Chapter 11 on July 2, 2009. Bank United Financial Corp. filed a Chapter 11 plan of reorganized premise on a cash infusion by a new investor who will in turn receive 21% of the new common stock plus preferred stock of the reorganized company. Bank United sought bankruptcy protection in May 2009, listing more than $15 million in assets. The company was the holding company for Bank United FSB, the largest banking institution in Coral Gables, Florida. On May 21, 2009, the bank was closed by regulators in the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, facilitated a sale of the bank to a management team headed by John Canis, a veteran of the banking industry and former head of North Fork Bank, as well as a group of investors by W.L. Ross and Company. The bank had assets of $12.8 billion and deposits of $8.6 billion as of May 2009. Harry and David entered into a bankruptcy proceeding in March 2011 with a plan support agreement with senior note holders. The plan support agreement provides that the company must file a Chapter 11 plan on the terms agreed upon by the parties no later than May 16th. The plan must be confirmed by September 12th and the debtors must exit bankruptcy by October 1st this year. Under the plan, reorganized Harry and David will issue 1 million shares on the effect date effective date of the plan, the company will raise $55 million in capital through the consummation of the rights offering. Participants in the rights offering can subscribe to the shares at an exercise price of $75 per share, reflecting a 25% discount to the plan implied equity value of $100 per share. The rights offering will be backstopped by certain note holders. RHI Entertainment, the made-for-TV movie developer, producer, distributor that commenced a prepackaged Chapter 11 case in December, had its reorganization plan approved by bankruptcy court. The company merged with its debt obligation reduced by more than $400 million. The rest will be paid to lien holders via newly issued stock, among other arrangements. The prepackaged plan had been accepted by all of the second lien debt and 94% of the first lien obligations. Specifically, under the plan, holders of the RHI first lien debt will receive $300 million of new term loan obligations, roughly 99% of the new common stock subject to dilution, and the holders of RHI second lien debt will receive roughly 1% of the new common stock subject to dilution, new warrants representing 15% ownership of new common stock on a fully diluted basis, and a limited fee and expense reimbursement of up to $250,000. Under a bankruptcy plan backed by creditors, Aris Management LLC and Mid-Ocean Partners, Sbarro's would convert second lien and bond debt to equity and raise $30 million in equity through a rights offering. Secondly, lenders with an allowed claim of $36.5 million will receive 36.5 million shares of new common stock of reorganized Sbarro and may participate in the rights offering. Senior note holders receive 29 million shares of new common stock and will be eligible to participate in the rights offering. Holders of other general unsecured claims will receive new common stock or new unsecured notes with 6% interest and a bullet maturity 7 years from the effective date of the plan or cash. The agreed equity value of the company for purposes of the plan is $96.5 million, assuming no debt other than the new first lien credit facility. In the rights offering, reorganized Sbarro will raise $30 million in cash in exchange for 30 million shares of new common stock to be issued on the plan, effective date at a price of $1 per share. As backstop commitment, MidOcean has committed to purchase 2.5 million of unsubscribed shares, and Aris has committed to purchase 27.5 million shares not sold in the rights offering. Apartment Communities developer PJ Finance Company, which sought protection under Chapter 11 early this March, sought bankruptcy approval to enter into a commitment letter with GEA Real Estate Investment LLC. Under the commitment letter, GEA will provide PJ Finance with $42 million in new financing that will enable debtors to consummate a plan of reorganization. GEA, along with an affiliate of PJ Finance, will also fund $1 million will get 100% of the equity interest of the entity that will be formed to consummate the Chapter 11 or reorganization. The Majestic Star Casino LLC received court confirmation of its plan of reorganization on March 10th. The plan contemplates for the reorganization company to issue shares of new common stock. Under the plan, Majestic Star will have access to a $58 million senior secured credit facility upon its emergence. Under the plan, senior secured credit facility lenders owed $65.3 million will be paid in full by receiving some cash and rolling over remaining debt. If new financing is available, the existing facility will be paid in cash. Holders of $348.4 million in senior secured notes are to have a 52% recovery of receiving 58% of the new equity and $100.6 million in cash. If new financing is not available, note holders will receive a new debt instead of cash. Holders of the senior notes will receive 42% of the new equity for about $233 million in debt, resulting in 25% recovery. General unsecured creditors will see 25% in cash or a share in $1 million, whichever is less. Holders of $72.6 million in notes, discount notes, will receive nothing. Authorization filed March 14th. Purposes for the company to issue shares of new common stock upon emergence. Pursuant to the plan, $15 million of debt under the debtor's DIP facility may be rolled over at the DIP facility provider's election into the financing available to the debtors post-emergence. $100 million of secured indebtedness under the floating rate note and floating rate note indenture will be converted into $70 million in shareholder notes and 100% of the new overage securities. The remaining $121.4 million of indebtedness under the floating rate notes and floating rate note indenture and all other general unsecured claims will be converted into 100% of the new common stock, subject to dilution by the management incentive plan, which new common stock will be distributed to the holders of such claims pro rata, and equity interest in Constar will be extinguished. Wolverine Tube Incorporated, the manufacturer and distributor of copper and copper alloy tube, fabricated products, and metal joining products, filed a plan of reorganization that contemplates for the company's issuance of shares of new common stock upon emergence. That ends the Baird Group Corporate Restructuring Review for March 2011, brought to you by the editors for the Troubled Company Reporter and Troubled Company Prospector. If you'd love to receive the Troubled Company Reporter for 30 days at no cost and with no strings attached, call Nancy Frazier or Charlie Covell at 240-629-3300 or visit bankrupt.com/free trial and we'll add you to the distribution list. And that telephone number again, 240-629-3300, and the website, bankrupt.com/free trial. And to be sure to tune into our next restructuring review on May 16th. Thank you for listening.